good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Pastor Butch Paul, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, February 7th, 2022. Hello, Butch.
Hello, Melody. You sound chipper today.
Always chipper.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear.
And even when you're not, you pretend you are.
Well, attitude is important. You try to get over whatever you're going through. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. Right now, in the hills, it's 60 degrees and sunshine. It feels really good. We haven't had this for a while, and it does feel good. Mm. It does. So I feel pretty chipper today,
too. Just rub it in. Just, you know.
Went to the gym today and survived it, so I guess I'm doing all right.
Yeah, yeah. Any other good news you want to share?
Well, how much time you got? I mean, no, I do feel it's good to be alive. I mean, we're here for a purpose, or we wouldn't be here. So I try to find what that purpose is and fulfill it, and that's what we try to do every day. Mm-hmm. But you go ahead.
All righty. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and start with gold because that's my purpose for being here, I suppose. Gold is up $13 today at $1,822. Silver is up 51 cents at $23.11. Platinum down 5 at $1,028, with palladium down 26, $2,352. The USDX today was down 0.06 at 95.43. Crude oil was down 89 cents at 91.42. Paper markets today, I guess it was sort of a Monday for everybody. The Dow was coming off its high for the day. It's only up a buck, or a point, I should say, 35,091. S&P was down 16 points at 4,483. The NASDAQ was down 82 points, 14,015. Asian markets were mixed. European markets were positive. 10-year yield, 1.91%, closer to 1.92 for the 10-year yield. And, you know, it's all pretty much the same discussions, and it's a little bit of the Olympics have sort of hijacked some of the news and so forth, what's going on out there. And so it's just pretty much the same that as far as the financial news is to be had. And I know you wanted to talk about something, Butch.
There's a lot of things to talk about, Melody. You know, we'll discuss the Olympics in a minute. The Olympics have been a big flop as far as viewership, unfortunately. But yeah, I guess other things on people's minds this time. And I think the whole world was going through a time of some serious thoughts about what we've been through the last couple of years. And it's hard to believe it's been almost 2 years since this COVID nonsense started. It's hard to believe, but it has been. And it's caused me problems around the world. People are maybe not paying much attention to the sporting games as they used to, with all the tension in the world. But this article I want to share is by Michael G. Murhige. Murhige. And I thought it was really well written, and it fits my generation. It says, ex-CIA officer asks, what happens when America experiences real war with a superpower? Now, this, when I read this, it touched me because being a Vietnam era vet myself and losing friends in Vietnam and realizing now it was all about money. When I went in, I really thought I was doing something great for the country, saving the world from communism and all that nonsense I bought because I've been trained all my life, and my dad was a World War II prisoner of war, wounded veteran, and he's right before he passed away some years, he realized that he was conned into that war also, and these things, that when you see these truths, it bothers you some. This article kind of covers it a little bit and makes some points that maybe we as Americans should consider. For a long time, we've never had any war on our own soil, not since the war between the states. I mean, that's 130, 40, 50 years ago. So this is things that we don't contemplate. But what if it were here? I want to share this article. Like I said, it's about a page, a little better than a page long, but it's important enough, I think. I'll try to read real slow and make the points as clear as I can. During my first years as a young CIA officer in Vietnam from 1965 to 67, I went to school, so to speak, and received the real education of my life. I learned about my government, its politicians and military leaders. I learned about the lies, the high explosive and chemical bombings, our superior firepower, villages bombed and burned, the payoffs we made to our ranking Vietnamese allies, and the reasons for our losing the war. The enemy fought to unite their country and expel foreign domination. The U.S. fought because of corrupt leadership, and our losses were a mere fraction being fought on the enemy's turf with our superior firepower, money, and material support. They fought for a cause. We fought for no justifiable reason. They won. We did not. Remember the body bags displayed on the tarmacs of a returning dead from Vietnam? Now, I want to add this to this. Folks, this isn't financial. I know that. It's just something that we need to consider. What goes around comes around. We have to understand that. I know personally that they ship drugs with dead soldiers in the body bags from Nam. But being young, naive, 20, 21-year-old young man and thinking I was doing something for my country's good, I figured, well, that's our side doing it, so it's got to be okay. So back to the article. Not like the lack of media coverage today, you've given the damage we inflict. Remember the disapproving reception of our returning soldiers? Now they celebrate them as heroes and wounded patriots. Here at home, we have not experienced wars employing mass destruction weapons. Maybe one day we will receive an education about the consequences of wars as a nation. Surely we learned nothing from Vietnam, as it never happened here. Our commitment to the two-decade multi-country invasions in the Middle East have shown our cowardice to the world, if not to ourselves. Our hypocrisy is stunning. No draft, no engagement, almost no KIAs each year. Far more troop suicides than battle deaths while displacing, killing and maiming thousands of innocent civilian lives year after year. For whom and what? And yes, our media is in full march step with these disgraceful invasions and occupations. Remember the uproar about Vietnam? Burned draft cards, a solemn in Canada, draft dodgers, street demonstrations, and sit-ins galore. And why not these now? The unending, shameful action by our government is making sure the public is not paying a price in people. No draft, very limited engagement with the enemy, and on approving media, what more can our government and Pentagon ask for? We will keep dropping bombs and feeding others money and weapons to assist with the killing, displacing of innocent population for us. But are these wars really for us? Certainly not. Remember George W. Bush and his failing presidency, who was made a hero the morning of 9/11 with his WMD declaration that fooled no one but Americans? Not a sound from the citizenry. Would we try the pitiful WMD routine on China or Russia? They had the ability to hit back. That's a good point, folks. Would we try the pitiful WMD routine on China or Russia? They have the ability to hit back. The national celebration that greeted George H.W. Bush and his death is a far cry from his presidency. It was not until after 9/11 that George W. Bush obeyed the lobby's demands to destroy Iraq, that his father was resurrected and his son was hailed as our glorious leader. Remember his welcome carrier landing, which turned out to be a dud? These wars that we persist with are not only cowardly, they demonstrate our lack of respect for other nations, the people, and our national conscience. Notably, they demonstrate our being a failed nation not capable of controlling or directing its own interest. We will go down in history as the most powerful but most surrogate nation ever, stunningly shameful with the blood of others staining our once proud national emblem. While we busy ourselves with enemies that we and friendly others have invented, we have become obvious to the enemy within, oblivious to the enemy within, the one taking us down. So it's a tough article to read, but I had to read it because it really touched me. Being part of the situation was part of the dumbed down, I say, generation, in the sense that we followed dictates as it did in Korea and other places since then, before then. We're seeing it now that this is something that's coming to roost. And the other countries are seeing that we have shamed ourselves. And we're not the nation that they once, I think, made a pact with that they thought they could trust. That's no longer part of the plan. It's no longer part of the game. And they know that. Why would any nation trust America today, folks, after what we've allowed to happen? Well, we've allowed not only to be caught in foreign wars that were unjustified, but letting the bankers destroy our economies, destroy our nation from the inside out, letting our nation morals be so corrupted that we're decaying. We're literally decaying as a society. Why would they respect and revere us as an ally and someone they can depend on? There's no way they can honestly do it, and most of them aren't now. So I want to say that, Mel. It's just something I want to add to that because I think it's important. This all ties together. As the economy crumbles, as society crumbles, the character of a nation is based on the character of its citizens. And I'm ashamed to say that I'm an American citizen that for a long time was blinded by the rhetoric that was given to me by the public school education and the media. And now that my eyes have been opened somewhat, I realize that we have not been a nation that we even thought we were for a long time. You want to add anything to that?
No. I mean, I'm not ashamed to be an American. I'm ashamed of what America has done. We through all these past wars and so forth, we were supposed to be the ones that are supposed to
be the good guys,
be stable, and yet we go in there behind the scenes and create the situations, as they all probably do. So we truly are no different, and we're becoming more and more like other nations, and it's all part of the. And I mean, you can call it whatever you want and so forth. You know, there's various names and everything, but we truly are becoming a globalized
society.
Unit.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. We are. And I said, I didn't mean to say it's a shame being American. If I come out that way, I didn't mean to become that way, but I'm ashamed of what we've done, like you said. I'm ashamed of what we've done.
Yeah, and the fact I know that
we were duped into it. And that's what bothers me, I guess, more than anything else, because we still are being duped into it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so much. Some people getting their eyes open, but we're still involved. And now with the situation going on, they'll discuss this more with Ukraine or whatever coming on. Will the people get their eyes open to maybe we're being conned again? I don't know. I want to just pray the Lord open people's eyes. That's all we can do. But I lost friends over there. There were decent people that I knew went to school with. Yeah. And it's bothered me ever since then. I wonder what the Lord's been in my life, and they were taken. But nonetheless, it still bothered me somewhat. And I'm 73 years old now. It's been a long time ago. But it still bothers me. It's a part of me. I don't talk about it much. I don't say much about it. But if I think about it, it does bother me. And maybe that's because I'm trying to hide it, so to speak, somewhere back under my conscience where I just don't think about it much. Because it does bother me. But then we'll move on from there. Getting something now economical, because I think this is important also. Obviously, the times we're living in is, this article starts out, it says hard times. Seven in ten Americans, or 70% of Americans say they're living paycheck to paycheck now. And Melody, I know that's true. People that retire are living check too, aren't they?
Certainly are.
You know, if anything disrupts that even a little bit, it's a disaster. In these tough financial times, a new study finds it's getting harder and harder for people to save any of their money. In fact, 7 in 10 Americans say they're living paycheck to paycheck. A recent survey of 2,007 adults found that 63% of the percent don't see themselves reaching a level of financial security that will allow them to live the lifestyle they want. Lack of financial education and resources may be the blame, particularly for women who were less likely to say they had access to these tools in comparison to men. To educate themselves en route to financial comfort, most turn to social media, their family, or online media such as financial news websites. Respondents also differed in what they consider to be essential for financial wellness. 79% of Americans earning over $150,000 a year found a savings account to be very important, compared to 54% of those with an income of $60,000 to $89,999. On average, respondents feel they need $686 disposable income per month to see feel financially comfortable. And you know, and that's, I guess, is a very fair comparison. But $60,000 a year in our area is probably well above the median income in this area I live in. well above it. So you can only imagine that people with $60,000 to $90,000 aren't saving any money. How much less can those making $35,000 to $45,000, $25,000 to $50,000, how much less can they save? And how close are they trying to hold it together? These are times that people need to consider, because I don't know about anybody else out there, but it seems like every time I turn around, there's something else going on that I have to cover or fix or do something that wasn't in the plan. And it does kind of trip you up a little bit. You follow what I'm saying on that?
Well, of course. And, you know, it's interesting. There was an article by McDonald's. He was a former CEO. And he says inflation is driving every U.S. restaurant absolutely crazy.
Oh, yes.
So when the food costs are driving restaurants crazy, what do you think it's doing to the average guy out there, in America? Rising prices are probably driving them crazy, too. And so it's just not companies out there. It's everyone out there that is feeling the pinch of rising prices. And and they'll start disguising the inflation again. You're going to have portions get smaller and smaller. But restaurants, you know, when everybody is pitching for higher wages to offset some of this inflation, you know, guess what they're going to turn to? And something that we've been talking about for a long time is technology and robots. Because they don't have to worry about increasing those wages. They don't have to worry about giving them health care and benefits. They don't have to worry about them calling in sick with COVID. They don't have to worry about vacations. So, you know, it's kind of like we're just on this ship, and there's only one place that we're going. And it's going to become more and more difficult for folks, and they have to adapt.
Yes.
I don't know how they're going to adapt.
That's a good question. I know today I bought 32 ounces of Clorox bleach for $5.70 roughly. For 32 ounces of bleach, these would be 99 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
That's a huge increase. I mean, I looked at it, I couldn't believe it. I mean, we're talking about not even a full gallon now, 32 ounces. And it's $5.67 to be exact. I was stunned. I hadn't bought any for a while. And Marcia said it's the only kind to buy. If you're going to buy it, it's the best on the market. So that's what I got. But I was shocked at the price of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
So.
And it's only the beginning.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll start seeing changes in businesses, and people will continue to lose their jobs. So every time they come out with all of these feel-good reports and everything, take it with a grain of salt.
There you go.
I hear the music. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog. It comes out on Friday. Dave does a great job on it. And make sure you give us a call, 800-375-4188. We got some deals on some American Gold Eagles, 1 ounce, and we also got some 90% silver coming to us. So those are some of the staples that everyone should have in their portfolios. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Butch?
Yes, ma'am. You know, I just think you're talking about the gold is, we know, been hovering around 1800 now for what, 2 months, a little longer, maybe 3 months. When it breaks out again, I think it's going to top. It's going to top its peak of 2000, and I don't think it's going to be for too long. I think long before this year's over, we're going to see gold over well over 2000. I really do. Maybe way before then, we'll see it happen. It's going to happen.
Oh, I think we'll see easy 2000. It's just, where does it go from there?
Exactly. Yes. An article came out of Reuters, I thought it was interesting too, and I know you're not old enough to remember the 50s, but I do slightly. I was born in 48. I do slightly. And I remember back in the 50s, a lot of people left our area, went to Ohio, a lot of them went to Ohio to find work in different places, and because business, jobs in this area were kind of scarce. Well, I hadn't really thought about being a child. I didn't know what hard times was. Mom and Dad always fed us, took care of us. So I didn't know what it meant to be hard up, but I guess they had a hard time. It says U.S. on the road to 1950-style unemployment, but it may only be a pit stop. Last time the U.S. unemployment rate fell below 3%, as one Federal Reserve official has predicted will this year, the Korean War was nearing its end, and the recession that saw legions of workers lose their jobs was just around the corner. While the circumstances were unusual, it's nonetheless presented a now familiar pattern, a falling unemployment rate eventually giving way to recession, that current Fed officials will be challenged to avoid. They try to slow the pace of inflation without wrecking the expansion of delivering strong gains for workers. Emblematic of the current confidence in the job market of the strength, St. Louis Fed President James Bullard last week said he expects U.S. unemployment rate to fall below 3% this year. That flash back to the 1950s is in itself would be a warning for some economists. Such a low unemployment rate is a red flare that the economy is overheating with fast price and wage increases that are unavoidable. The U.S. Central Bank pushed to be more aggressive, as said Tim Dewey, a University of Oregon professor and the chief economist of SGH Micro Advisors. I don't see where there's a good way out that tames inflation without triggering a recession and the associated jump in unemployment. It's a trade-off of jobs for price control. The Fed thought had become less relevant in the decade before the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. Unemployment drifted towards 3% without triggering inflation, and policymakers felt that showed the economy could put far more people to work than previously thought, with prices remaining stable. So I didn't tie this together really. A lower jobless rate, 3%, which we know is a lot higher than they say it is, but 3%. Could trigger a recession. I hadn't really thought about that. Economy overheating, and of course, inflation now taking a toll. They're walking a tightrope, Melody. What are they going to do to keep it falling completely under? What's going to be the key, you think, is time to keep it somewhat stable? What kind of trick are they going to pull out of their hat this time?
Well, I can't see behind the screen of the magicians, but I mean, they're certainly using all their tools that they had during 2008 and created some new ones, and that's what they'll do. They'll define new programs, and they'll use, you know, print as much money as they can to keep it. We'll see what happens when they begin to raise rates. But, you know, if the era of easy money is over, and it was easy money that got us all the if easy money got us the great economy, what do people expect will happen if he begins to start raising rates? So Europe's not doing it. I think it's, you know, Greenspan, I said this on this program lots of times, he says it's not what we do, it's what we say. And it's amazing what they can, you know, what they, how they can control things by just what that they promise. They can make markets move in any direction. And, you know, again, you know, and Butch, it's, their focus is Wall Street.
True.
And what is the real economy? What is our real economy? And you can't believe anything that they tell us. Look at the jobs report. Like, are you kidding me? You know, something's not right. If COVID was so bad for January, the end of December and January, then how could so many jobs been created? You know, so the whole thing just doesn't even make sense on what they do. And so do I believe the economy is good? Well, it's not failing, but people aren't getting ahead.
No, they're actually losing ground. According to the mainstream news, losing ground.
Uh-huh.
But would you say that our economy is 80% or more service-related, not production-related?
Oh, of course. Yes.
Well, you see, that's going to be the key. You can't always have service jobs if you don't have production, can you?
Not supposed to.
So how long can we go with the economy that we have to be fed from other sources outside of our control? If we don't get the goods from other places, we can't even have a service economy, can we?
No, we can't.
So, folks, we need to stop and realize this. When the flow cuts off that brings in the goods for us to move around and to sell and to produce, and not produce, but sell and move to consumers, what's going to happen to the economy? What keeps it moving now are stores, retailers, and restaurants, and consumer, and motels, and vacation resorts. That's all great. But it's not production of goods. When you're not producing goods, you have an economy that runs on somebody else's steadfastness to give you the goods that you can sell and work on. That's what we're seeing in America, and it's going to come to an end. America lost its ability to produce anything, really. It can't even feed itself any longer. This is what we're facing in America. Go ahead, Mel. They'll be quiet now a minute.
No, go right ahead. No, just.
I mean, it's just making plumb sense, plumb good sense. That's a hillbilly talk, by the way, folks. Plumb. Means right.
Here, let me write that down.
But anyway, plumb good sense. But this article I thought was ties right in what we're saying. They don't take much tickle here, but I mean, anyway.
No.
Tyson Foods soars to record after hiking beef, chicken, and pork prices by double digits. Now, this article bothered me. I'm going to explain why in a minute. Stock of Tyson Foods, the world's second largest processor and marketer of chicken, beef, and pork after Brazil's JBS SA, is soaring 9%, hitting an all-time high, and is one of the S&P's best companies this morning. After the company reported blowing earnings thanks to passing on surging food prices and announced that it was raising prices even more as it grappled with a tight labor market and smaller livestock herds, according to report, beef prices jumped 32% this last quarter, chicken 20%, and pork 13%. This helped Tyson's operating margin grow to 11.3%, up from 6.7% a year earlier. The higher meat prices has however, had the Biden administration scrambling as profits continue to mount at meat packers, where runaway inflation continues to crush Biden's collapsing approving rating. Now, I understand Tyson and any other business, Melody, has to make a profit. I understand that. I had no problem with that. I'm all for that. But when they hit record highs and raise their prices, they say they raise them to cover inflation, but actually they raise them more than inflation because they're making record highs off what the inflation is. Now, I know that's inflated dollars. I realize that. But is it right for a company to raise the prices more than necessary to make a profit that you made last year on the backs of consumers? You follow what I'm saying?
You know, it's funny because if you have an oil crisis, if you have a situation, you know, whether, you know, some sort of event or something, and if gas stations increase their gasoline by so much more than what they have to, it's usury, and states will come down hard on them. I can remember they did that. We had a nice storm, and gas stations just raised their prices. I mean, just silly. And the state came in. I don't know if it was the state or if it was the town or the county or whatever, but government came in. And they were fined because they overcharged people. And it's kind of like, you know, in other products and so forth. It doesn't matter if people get overcharged anymore. Maybe it's just a buyer beware, but if people are going to pay for it, it's all about their shareholders. They're going to charge whatever they can. People will keep paying it. Until people stop paying it, they're going to keep overcharging. It's that simple. So I don't know, how they can continue to overcharge and increase and so forth. It's all about the bottom line. It's all about Wall Street. Got to keep the illusion going. So
again,
what is a fair price?
I'm all for making a profit. Again, I'm not discounting that they were inflated dollars also since last year. I realize that also. But to hit record highs on the backs of people that can hardly afford to buy food already, to me, that's just wrong. It's just wrong. And,
but these people don't have a conscience or anything like that.
The corporations.
Yeah.
Corporations. They don't have a conscience.
No.
And U.S. heating oil and diesel stocks dwindle as demand rises. And this is such a complicated system, it seems. I mean, you think about how smooth things have run in this country for many, many years as a whole. I mean, everything we needed was right on time. When we needed it, was there. We went to the store today to buy a dozen eggs, but two places in our little town, nobody had eggs for sale. That's unusual. That's highly unusual. Maybe milk tomorrow or something. It's just highly unusual. Things are not coming in like they used to. There used to be a steady supply. You didn't have to worry about it. You went to the store and you had what you wanted. I went shopping for a recliner for myself and Marcia, and it took us three stores to find recliners that we liked well enough they had in stock, because they won't sell the one off the floor if they don't have anything left over in the stock. They won't sell it until they get some more of them in. And that can take anywhere from 6 to 16 weeks. We finally found a couple they had in stock. But what I'm saying is, we never faced that before, Melody. I don't remember in my lifetime ever facing a time where I went to a store, two or three stores, and I didn't have what I wanted. I don't remember that ever happening before in my lifetime. It may have, but I don't remember it. Because we had a chain of supply and demand coming in, but that chain's been disrupted. For whatever reason, COVID, blame what you want to, it's been disrupted. And now it's starting to come home to you and I at the bottom of the line, so to speak. The consumer's the end of the line, and we're the ones going to pay for it or do without it. The supplies of diesel and heating oil in the United States have dwindled as refiners are having trouble replenishing their domestic fuel supply this winter, which may keep oil prices elevated for months. Heating oil futures reached $2.38 per gallon as the market closed on February 4th, the highest price in 7 years. U.S. and global benchmarks for crude oil futures hit above $90 a barrel as a harsh winter storm affected a large portion of the country, adding to existing supply concerns. The latest national average price for diesel fuel was $3.78 per gallon, the highest since September 2014. Fuel production in the United States has not kept up with the demand for months, with East Coast stockpiles at their lowest level since April 2020. When the inventories are low, refiners will generally respond by ramping up output. But several key U.S. refineries have been out of action since the start of the pandemic, while others are under maintenance. Many of the operational refineries are currently producing less output to avoid producing too much jet fuel, where demand still lies below 2019 levels. Global refining capacity shrank by more than 2 million barrels per day during the pandemic, while the U.S. refining capacity last year fell 4.5% to 18.1 million barrels per day. Demand for diesel, heating oil, and other related products has been running 5% higher than pre-pandemic levels, putting inventories at 15% less than the 5-year moving average, according to data from U.S. Energy Information Administration. So when the chain's broken, whatever it may be, heating oil, food, anything else, when the chain is broken, it comes right down to it. If you can't get it, or the prices go up a bunch and you can't afford it, either way, the outcome's the same. You don't have it. You either can't buy it because you can't afford it, or it's not there. It still hurts either way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it does. And also, if there's something there that you want, and you have to go to three stores to get it.
Yes.
When you get to that third store, instead of just buying one, most people probably buy two or three, which takes more off the shelf. And then again, we're beginning to see, you know, I hear all the time about the empty shelves. So so it just adds a little bit more, you know, it makes the situation a little more dire because people are still, I don't want to call it, say they're hoarding. I don't think people are really hoarding, but I mean, they're certainly buying more than what they probably normally do.
And that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, it does.
It makes sense. Remember the old saying, waste not, want not? You remember that saying by any chance?
I do.
Okay. Well, people are doing now. They're getting maybe a little more careful with how they spend the money, mm-hmm. how they use what they buy. That makes perfect sense. My grandma and my wife's grandma both went through the depression, and they talked about, you know, everything. They saved everything. They didn't, you know, they, I guess you could almost call them hoarders in a sense. They kept things around the house. They made rugs out of empty bread wrappers, made throw rugs out of that. And Marsha's grandma kept them up to the day she passed away. She had a drawer full of empty bread wrappers with where they used to make rugs out of those somehow for the kitchen or the home. So yeah, and my mom used to make bed sheets for us out of sacks. I'm serious. I remember this. The feed sacks were colorful. There were flowers on them or whatever. And she made sheets for the beds out of those. Folks, this is changed now. It really has. But this is may come back again. Make people have to give them a little more self. What am I looking for? A little more self-reliant, and use things they haven't used for a long time to get by with. Just mm-hmm. my thought on that. Yeah. But goodbye, easy money. As hockey central banks speed up rate hikes, the end of easy money is upon us. 2 years after the pandemic sent the global economy into a deep but short recession, central bankers are withdrawing their emergency support, and they're moving faster than they or most investors had foreseen. The U.S. Federal Reserve is preparing to raise interest rates in March. Last Friday's jobs report fueled speculation it may need to move aggressively. The Bank of England just delivered back-to-back hikes, and some of its officials want to act even more forcefully. The Bank of Canada is set for its liftoff next month. Even the European Central Bank may get into action later this year. So rate hikes are going to have to do something, try to slow inflation. Melody, can we withstand that this time? Is this possible to get by with this? This tightening money situation, is that going to really help, or is that going to make it worse now?
I mean, anything that they do is going to make the bottom end at the end worse. I mean, because they're not fixing anything. They're just trying to keep things going, to keep it flowing. And this is an election year, so who knows what they'll be able to pull out of their hats in order to keep the system going. And, you know, just it remains to see what shocks will come to the system after they begin. So, but we do have a shocker here. We're heading into another break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody, and I'm here with Butch. And what else do we have to talk about?
Oh,
anything
wow.
interesting? Anything fun?
I think, well, you want fun? I can have to change gears to do that right now. But I do that on Fridays, you know. But this is
okay.
Another article I think that's, this seems so insane, but it's really happening. Technocrats demand meat tax to fight climate change. A group of environmental economists in Germany, folks, that's Germany. Oh, it's Germany, it's not us, but folks. It'll go worldwide eventually. Is demanding that huge taxes be imposed on meat products to fight climate change, which calls for beef to be 56% more expensive. Gee. Asserting that livestock is responsible for 13% of greenhouse gas emissions, researchers from TU Berlin's Chair of Sustainable Use and Natural Resources are demanding limitations on meat consumption or to attain greenhouse gas neutrality. Folks, we know they're making artificial meat right now. We're going to be importing artificial meat from Israel this year. You can buy it in a store eventually. Yes, you can. Livestock, and I mean artificial meat. Some of them grown from meat sales, actually. But no animals die. Livestock farming is a huge contributor to greenhouse gas emissions, soil and water pollution, and precious forests are being cleared for pastures and root crops, food crops, said the leader of the group, Professor Linus Matuk. Evidence suggests that the environmental impacts are so large that the world can't meet climate goals and keep vital ecosystems intact without reducing the consumption of meat, at least in the Western high-income countries. That's us. Muttok wants governments to start thinking about also taxing meat to reduce its consumption, asserting that this is the most efficient path to preventing further strain on our planet. Really? I mean, we're going to blame it on cows. I'm sure other animals, too. I mean, sheep also eat grass, and they pass gas, and chickens make manure, and chickens, I mean, this is, so we're going to raise the price on food, meat, to the point that most people can't afford it. Of course, that's why they bring in artificial meats and sell them. People like meat, that tastes like meat, they probably eat it. Why already got burger places selling artificial beef? So why not do it this way? Cut off the supply of real meat, bring in artificial meat. I mean, it makes sense to me, Millie. If it's working, I mean, why not go for more of it? But the 56% tax.
How do we feed billions and billions and billions of people? I mean, half the world is starving now as it is.
I guess grow more insects.
Is that it?
Grow more bugs, I reckon. Maybe they're not starting the economy. I don't know.
I mean, half this, you know, part of the world is already or still starving.
Yes.
I'm not saying it's a good thing that they're doing this, not at all. Don't get me wrong. They're using this, you know, global warming, this climate change as a way to do whatever they need to do to promote their agenda. I get all that. But how do you feed people? We can't do it now.
You're asking a tough question. I don't have the answer for that. I don't know. I really don't know.
The population, I guess.
That's what they've been trying to do that also, obviously.
Yeah.
That's their goal. That is their goal. Yeah. 500 million worldwide. 7.5 billion have been wiped out. That's their goal, folks. I mean, Klaus Schwab said it himself. I didn't say it. That's what they're looking at. You know, we talk about inflation and things here, and, you know, we hadn't paid much attention to Cuba. Now, Cuba's not far from the U.S., about 90 miles off the coast of Florida, so it's our neighbor. Like it or lump it, they're there. But Cuba slaps new tax on food sales as the economic woes hit hard. Cuba on Saturday announced a new 10% tax on retail food sales as the countries endure economic woes marked by rampant inflation. The levy, taking effect Monday, will target self-employed people and small and medium-sized companies in the retail food sector, said a decree published in the official government gazette. These sales were only allowed starting in August of last year as part of the reforms in the communist-run island. Cuban economist Pedro Monreal wrote on Twitter that the new tax will probably have two effects: higher food prices and more inequality among the Cuban people. Monreal said it will hurt lower-income households that spend a relatively higher percentage of their resources on food. Monetary reforms applied last year caused price of goods and services to shoot up in Cuba, mainly those of food. Inflation last year came in at 70%, Melody, in Cuba. I did not know that. 70%. Okay. People have to wait in long lines for scarce supplies of food and medicine. Folks, it's coming to America. It is coming to America. You can take that to the bank. It's coming to America. Cuba imports 80% of its food it consumes. Its purchases have declined drastically due to the shortage of hard currency and because of international transport problems stemming from the COVID pandemic. They import 80% of the food it consumes. America imports, I would say, well over half what we consume now. Not to mention all the other products we have to have here to live on. Our clothing, our automobiles, everything we have, our oil, everything is imported, basically at least half of it or more. And they said they're hurting because of hard currency. Folks, we haven't had hard currency in this country since 1964. It took silver out of the dollar. America's heading for the same road. You better hitch up your pants and get ready because it's coming. If you're not preparing somehow to get yourself ready for this, you're going to be, oh, folks, I can't begin to explain to you how dire this is going to be. And I may not live to see it. I'm getting an old man. But a lot of you will see it. And your children are going to see it for sure. You better be preparing with something, folks, like some real food stored somewhere. Make sure you have fresh drinking water. Make sure you have some real money in your hand, something tangible, not paper dollars, not some kind of trust fund which is all in paper or stocks. Real money, gold and silver in your hand to trade and barter with. This is coming to America. I promise, folks, it's coming. And one day, where we say we're 7% last year, we're actually higher to 20, I'd say closer to 20% or better inflation. But we'll wait to hit 70%, and it will hit here in America. There's no way around it. It's going to happen. Fiat currencies always inflate themselves out of existence, so to speak. It's coming to America. Melody, I'll be quiet and let you say what you want to say now.
No, I mean, I'll guarantee you a lot of people don't believe that. Probably believe it can't happen here. I mean, we've had a pretty nice ride. We didn't have too many bad days. And when we did have those bad days, they were corrected. And, and many fared well. Some not so much, but many did fare well. And that causes us to become complacent to what's truly happening in and around us and what will the future hold. And it's hard to look into the future. People ask me all the time, well, what do you see is going to happen? It's like, well, if I knew what was going to happen and I had that crystal ball, I wouldn't have to work anymore.
Yeah.
So we just really got to do the best that we can do and see what's going on and around us and don't be oblivious to it and know that, you know, we've had a nice ride, and usually those rides come to an end. And when you look at what you were talking about, our currencies, that's what's driving the car, and that's what's going to collapse. That's what's going to be devalued. And you can call it whatever you want, the reset or whatever, but it's just, where there's an action, there's reactions. And we have yet to experience many reactions to those actions that were created by the Federal Reserve and our fiat currency and the agenda to globalize everything. So, you know, I guess people can jump on that bandwagon and go along for the ride and maybe they'll be taken care of. They might. They might not. Or you can be independent, and you can know what is really how things are really supposed to be, right, Butch?
That's very true. Very true. We've become a very spoiled nation. We really have. We truly have a soft nation. But back to some more different news here, and I don't know whether it's going to happen or not, folks. This is being said more and more in mainstream news, and do I trust our news media? Sure, like I would sleep with a rattlesnake. Of course I do. Kyiv could fall in 2 days with a huge civilian toll, U.S. assessments find. Folks, I don't know whether Russia's really doing everything they're saying they're doing, or is our news hyping things up. I do not trust our news media, period. I don't trust them. Russia is close to completing preparations for what appears to be a large-scale invasion of Ukraine that could lead up to 50,000 civilians killed or wounded, decapitate the government of Kyiv within 2 days, and launch a humanitarian crisis with up to 5 million refugees fleeing the resulting chaos, according to updated U.S. military intelligence assessments briefed to lawmakers and European partners over the past several days. The rising concerns come as the Russian military continues to dispatch combat units to Ukrainian border in both its own territory and Belarus. As of Friday, seven people familiar with the assessment said there were 83 Russian battalion tactical groups with about 750 troops each arrayed for a possible assault. That is up from 62 weeks ago and compromising about 70% of what Russia's President Vladimir Putin needs to have in place if he wants to maximize the operation. Those more than 62,000 troops are backed by tens of thousands of additional personnel to provide logistics, air power, and medical support. U.S. officials have said the Russian presence along Ukraine's border totals more than 100,000. One Western security official put the number at 130,000. Russia has long bristled over Ukrainian independence. Ukraine was part of the now-defunct Soviet Union and parts of this territory for centuries were ruled by Russia. Ukraine also aspires to NATO membership, which Putin adamantly rejects. I don't know, Melody. I mean, this appears to be heating up. I mean, we have 3,000 troops heading to Germany and other places now to back this up. Our troops. And Trump just said two weeks ago, he's not going to put any boots on the ground. Of course, you can trust him. He'll never lie to us. But we're seeing the build up there. Biden. Is it real? Yeah, Biden. I said Trump. Biden, thank you. Same difference. But Biden, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't know. But I don't trust our media, Melody. I can't trust what they're telling us. This may be happening maybe even more than we know. But if they went to war with Russia tomorrow, I wouldn't know who started the war, would you?
Nope, not at all.
But it would still affect us, though, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
The first article I read, what would happen if we get in a war with the superpower, where the war comes to our soil for a change? Oh, my goodness, what would happen to this country? But it said both sides of Taiwan Strait are closely watching Ukraine's crisis. With Russia massing troops along Ukraine's border, President Tsai Ing-wen of Taiwan felt compelled to act. She ordered the creation of a task force to study how the confrontation thousands of miles away in Europe could affect Taiwan's longstanding conflict with its larger, vastly more powerful neighbor. Taiwan has faced military threats and intimidation from China for a long time, Ms. Tsai told a gathering of the National Security Advisors last month, according to a statement by her office. Perhaps more people in any other place in the world, Taiwanese know what it's like to live in the shadow of an overbearing power with China claiming the island as its own. Ms. Tsai added, we emphasize with Ukraine's situation. While the correlation is not exact, the confrontation between Russia and the United States over Ukraine's fate has resonated on both sides of Taiwan Strait, highlighting the strategic calculus China and Taiwan have made about the possibility of an armed conflict. Now, it goes on to say, in China, some have viewed a crisis in Ukraine as a potential crisis for the United States that could undermine America's support for the island, while also draining attention and resources that might otherwise be directed at Chinese military ambitions in the Pacific. For Taiwan, it has become a test of strategic assumption that lies at the core of the island's defense, that Americans' military forces could intervene to stop the Chinese invasion. If the Western powers fail to respond to Russia, they do embolden the Chinese thinking regarding action to Taiwan, said Les Ching, the president of the Prospect Foundation of Taiwan's capital, Taipei, and former director of China's Affairs Department for using ruling Democratic Progressive Party. So if we don't respond to Russia's move, if they do it, it's going to embolden China to make another move on Taiwan. Folks, it makes perfect sense. We are too far scattered out around the world, and two enemies like Russia and China, we don't stand a snowball's chance of covering all those fronts. It's impossible. It can't happen. It won't happen. And we're seeing this right now adding up and warming up in both sides of the world. So, Millie, this could be a very dire situation, couldn't it?
It really could, and then you would have to see where, you know, where it goes from there. And I think Russia's flexing their muscles. They've got China behind them. Russia couldn't do this without China. You know, he failed the first time. He'd fail again. So I think he's, you know, they're making a point. And I don't know where it's going to lead. And it's, you know, we can only pray that nothing happens. But eventually something will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a matter of time.
It has to. Somebody's fanning the flames. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing it, which side doing it, but somebody's fanning the flames, and eventually you're going to have a fire that gets out of control. And I think enough people see that now. You mentioned Olympics at the beginning of the program. Not many people are paying attention to Olympics this time. Maybe, I don't know what all the reasons are, but thinking people maybe are not too concerned about watching sports, although they may enjoy it, when the minds and feeding the family and what's coming on this country. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they're not paying much attention to this Olympics this time. I don't know that. Of course, America's not really involved in it that much, so maybe it's another reason why the United States isn't watching much of it. I really don't know, Melody, but there's a lot of tension around the world, not just here. And it's not easing up at all, is it?
No, it isn't. Doesn't seem to be. But we are out of time for today. That hour went by fast, and we will be returning tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.